We're back! Welcome back, everyone, to the Higher Standards Podcast. This is episode 23. I am Mr. Jason Roscom. With me this week, every week, is Renee.
And maybe my washing machine, apparently.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. And Chad.
Hey, guys. How you guys doing?
All right, guys. This is an interesting show. We don't have many standard tournament reports, but we do have a big limited tournament to report on just because we were all there in one fashion or another. So let's hop right into it. Chad, where was this week's Grand Prix?
Well, there were two Grand Prix this week. The one that we're going to be talking about a majority is going to be Grand Prix Paris or Grand Prix Paris. That's in Texas or Las Vegas.
Oh, my God.
Something like that.
Paris, Texas. Come on, get it right.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I'm so glad I'm back. We're in France, hon.
All right.
We're going to France with the Eiffel Tower and the Louvre.
I thought in Las Vegas there was an Eiffel Tower.
Oh, that's right. There is a Paris in Las Vegas.
Not the Eiffel Tower.
Oh, it's just like the miniature.
But everybody's been talking about Grand Prix in Las Vegas. I just assumed this was it, right?
No, that one's a little whiles away, like only a couple weeks.
So it's like the Eiffel Tower in Despicable Me. Like he stole the small one instead of the big one.
I guess. I haven't seen it. I don't have kids, so I have no reason to see these movies.
That movie's so good.
All right, so Paris, Toronto, Grand Prix, let's go.
Toronto?
What? Oh, sorry. Nothing? I mean, nobody?
What? Wait, all right, so we're talking about Grand Prix Paris?
Yes.
All right, Renee, you might as well start this, because you know a lot more than we do about geography.
All right, because that became apparent last time. So we were in Paris, which is in fact in France. Shocker. There were a lot of really good things happening at the Grand Prix this weekend, and they had a total of 1,426 players.
That's pretty good for a European tournament, I would think, right?
Especially standard.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, their numbers are typically a little lower than ours, but at the same time, their legacy and vintage numbers tend to be higher. And our winner was, maybe, if I can find it, top 8 coverage.
I can give his name a shot. I will butcher it. But it's Armand Dosmont?
I would say Dosmont.
I would not say that.
Yeah. You're looking at 4 years of French here.
Nice. I took 2 of Spanish. That's all I got.
Realize that Sao Paulo was in a chain.
You know. No, forget it.
Moving on.
I'm pretty sure that was Chad that said that, and I just kind of went with it.
Yeah, it was definitely me.
Holes being dug deeper. You're seeing it right here, folks. Yes.
Chad is the racist, not me.
Wait, why are you calling this racist?
I'm just ignorant. Chad's racist.
All right. Well, I'm going to plead the fifth.
All right, so Abzan Agro.
First place, Abzan everywhere.
Yes, pretty
this
much.
This was very, like, 1 through 8 was kind of boring, and then once you get into 9 through 16, you're like, oh my god, this is so awesome.
Yep, so do we want to just blow through these real quick? Do we want to cover any actual lists?
I like the way the lists are going as far as Agro because of the fact that there's so many different versions.
All right, so let's talk about number one. I guess number one at least deserves our attention, so.
Yeah.
Well, Chad, since you wanted to talk about it.
All right, 21 creatures. We've got 4 Fleeceman Lion, 4 Rakshasa Death Dealer. That's 2 more than normal. 4 Siege Rhino, 2 Warden of the First Tree, 2 Wingmate Rock, 4 Anafens of the Foremost. She is legendary, so you're playing with fire there. 1 Sorak the Huntcaller. You've got 2 Planeswalkers in the form of 2 Sorin Solemn Visitor, 25 lands, opposed to the normal 24, and 12 spells. 4 Abzan Charm, of course, draw, exile, whatever you want. 2 Dromoka's Command does everything else the Abzan Charm doesn't, 2 Heroes Downfall, and 4 Thoughtseize. In the board, we've got 3 Den Protectors, because why not? 1 Dromoka Command to make 3. 2 Elspeth Sun's Champion for those long matches, 3 Drown in Sorrow, 2 Duress, 2 Glare of Heresy, that hasn't been seen much play lately, and 2 Self-Inflicted Wound, which I believe is the best card in that, what are they called? That pattern that
sideboard.
No, the cycle.
That's right.
Oh, the color hoser cycle.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So I have a question.
Shoot.
We've been kind of blowing past abs and aggros for a while because they haven't really changed much. It's like a onesie twosie difference here and there. But I guess because we've been blowing past these lists, I must have forgotten. But is Thoughtseize normally a four of in these lists?
No.
No yet.
Okay, so it's normally three. I'm not crazy. Well, I mean, is Thoughtseize even in the main at all in the aggro list?
For some of them, no. It's not even, you know, there's maybe two in the side.
So I personally like Thoughtseize in the main just because it's taking care of so much problems that could happen.
So, I mean, to me, really, this feels more mid-rangey. I understand that this is kind of what the definition of abs and aggro is these days, but it seems so much more of a mid-range list than an actual aggro list, especially with the things like your thought seizes and your four abs and charms.
Yeah, there's that, but I believe that with Rakshasa Death Dealer and Place Mainline, you can definitely put the hurting on really quick.
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, they eat control for breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
It can be aggro-y for sure, but you've also got, you know, your two wingmate rocks, your Sorens, Thoughtseize, stuff to kind of control the game and kind of grind out the game, as opposed to just getting in there with as many creatures as you can.
Yeah.
But still a solid list.
And a singleton Sorok the Huntcaller.
Yeah, kind of an odd choice. I think you'd want maybe two. He's that good.
So
I just don't know if, like... So, yeah, he's that good. But there are so many... He's just in an awkward spot with this deck where you need 8 or greater.
Yeah.
And all of your things that come down before him aren't necessarily going to get you to that 8 or greater easily.
True.
So I'd like to mention, Anna Fenza the Foremost, she's a 4 of in here. And like I said, she is a legendary creature, but all the decks that are playing the Deathmist Raptor Den Protector combo, which we haven't come to a full conclusion on what we're going to call that yet, they kind of get hosed because her second ability is if a creature card would be put into an opponent's graveyard from anywhere, exile it instead.
Yeah, and up to this point, this really hasn't been that important an ability.
Yeah, it was. Sadistic Whip.
I mean, yeah, for Reanimator, but now there's more than one option to play her.
So it's more relevant now than I think it ever has been, because we do still have your Sultai Reanimators, and now we also have stupid Deathmist.
Yeah, and there's one thing I'd also like to mention. Because Anna Fenza is in here, you don't see any Deathmist or Den Protectors in the main, because you don't want to hose your own creatures.
Right, because that's everybody, right?
No, I'm wrong. It's opponents.
Oh.
My bad. So yeah, it's kind of awkward, but won first place, so congrats.
Good job. Second place I wouldn't mind spending a little time on as well, just because I know we've talked about these collected company decks, but let's go ahead and review it real quick.
Go for it.
All right, so in second place we have Zan Syed, sounds about right, with green-white collected company. Pay attention because you're going to hear that name again. His list is 24 creatures, 4 Courser of Kruphix, 4 Deathmist Raptors, 4 Den Protectors. I'm just going to say he's got a den full of raptors. 4 Elvish Mystics, 4 Fleece Mane Lions, 2 Hidden Dragon Slayer. I kind of want to talk about him a little bit.
Yeah.
2 Warden of the First Tree, 4 Collected Company, because, hey, that's what the deck's named after, 3 Dromoka's Commands, 3 Mastery of the Unseen, 2 Valorous Stance, 24 lands, and his sideboard consists of 3 Irration Cleric, 2 Elspeth Sun's Champion, 3 Hornet Nest, 3 Plummet, 2 Reclamation Sage, and 2 Whisperwood Elementals. So, we've seen these lists before. He's got the den full of raptors, like every other green-based deck does. But I like the inclusion of Hidden Dragon Slayer, and I don't know if these decks have been playing him up to now, but after playing in a limited Grand Prix, I've seen the power of this guy, and I was going to say on the cast anyway that I'm surprised he has not been getting more standard play, but here he is in second place.
I think people were very trepidous of the Megamorph when it first came out,
right,
except for with the Den Protector Deathmist Raptor, because it was very obvious how that impacts the board.
Yeah.
Versus Hidden Dragon Slayer, which wasn't seen as impactful.
Really? Like, is it based on, like, his Megamorph cost, or just they don't think that his flip ability is that important?
I just, like, So the main thing you want to kill with power 4 or greater is Stormbreath Dragon. I don't think you can do that with Hidden Dragon Slayer.
Right, because he's got the protection from white. But, I mean, you can hit Thunderbreak Regent. You can hit a lot of cards with that stuff.
Oh, yeah, but, at the time, we were very hyper-focused on Stormbreath.
Okay, I can see that.
This Dragon Slayer does not slay all the dragons.
No, that is true. Much like Dragon Hunter does not block all of the dragons when it comes to Stormbreath.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I like this guy. I think he has a place in Standard, specifically in a deck like this that's running cards like Mastery and Deathmist Raptor, and I'm looking forward to seeing him getting played more, because a 3-2 life-linking body that can also destroy a creature is pretty good.
Yeah.
Really good. So I wanted to point that out. That was the one thing I wanted to point out about this list. What do you guys think?
There's one more thing to point out about Hidden Dragon Slayer. If Mastery of the Unseen actually flips it, then it only costs 2.
True, yeah, if he's manifested, yeah.
Yeah, it only costs 2 to flip him up instead of the 3.
But no 1-1 counter.
True, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Something that I actually really like is the Irration Cleric in the sideboard.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a really cheap creature to bring in against your aggro decks that gains you the life and blocks most of their early guys.
True.
So once you see Anafenza, you can take out the Den Protectors or the Death Nest Raptors inside in the Irration Clerics and the Hornet's Nest really easily.
Yep. And he's got a plan for killing Stormbreath Dragons with a 3 plummet in the sideboard.
Yeah, he does.
So he knows what his weakness is and he's ready for it. But yeah, this is a very solid deck. Collected Company apparently is a good card. But that's what I'm hearing. I don't know.
Coco for life.
But yeah, good deck, and I expect to see a lot more of this going forward, and a majority of these cards are all cons block. So this deck is going to lose very little through rotation.
Very true.
Yeah, I mean, really, what is he going to lose? He's going to lose Courser, maybe Elvish Mystic, but I could see that getting reprinted in Origins. And then
or Llanowar Elves.
Yeah.
Fleece Mane.
Going back to Llanowar. But yeah, congratulations to Zan. That's a cool name. I like that name. Zan. I wish that was my name.
Right. So in third place, we have Abzan Midrange with Antonio Del Moral Leon. Because that's an awesome name. When you have 4 names.
Yeah. So wait a minute. Hold on. According to the list that I'm looking at, that was fourth place. Did we
it
skip
might be wrong.
Did we skip third place Red Deck Wins, or did they just get this wrong on TCG Player?
They might have got it wrong, because I've got it open on the Star City Games, and it says that he's in third as well.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. Come on, TCG, you're letting me down.
So let's see here. Let's see if I can find...
You must be on the Wizard site.
I'm trying to fit... Yeah, well, I know... Zan's... Okay. Well,
so that shows...
Yeah,
that...
no, he should be third, because... He lost to a mod, so that would put him into third, yeah. Antonio Del Moral Leon. Yes, third. TCG is wrong. But it's kind of the typical Abzan midrange, except that we've lowered the curve for some reason. Just
yeah.
Doesn't, yeah.
I mean, he's still running 26 lands, but yeah, this is... He's
got them protectors and fleece mane lions.
Right, and he's running one Dromoka's Command in the main. I've seen these running them mostly in the sideboard, but
yeah.
He's got one in the main.
But I don't even want to call this mid range. I want to call it aggro control, because his idea is to push a lot of damage in, be able to Crux, rebuild real fast.
Yeah,
and then Elspeth.
Yeah, but I. The Abzan control lists have been running Fleece Mane Lions in the main as
this
of late.
This is why it's aggro control.
yeah. I mean, because again, we mentioned it before, Fleece Mane Lion is really good against control.
Yes.
I can see why they would put this in the main with all the Esper running around.
But nothing else really exciting here, except Irration Cleric again. Apparently he's big in Europe.
Yeah. Okay, so here's a question. So a lot of these Abzan control mid-rangey lists are starting to run Den Protector. Den Protector is a pretty good card, right?
Yes.
So do you always just drop this on, like, turn 5 so you always have the Megamorph available, or will you just blindly throw this down on turn 3 and hope you can untap with it? Is there any instance where you can see yourself dropping this on 3 or 4 without having the mana to Megamorph?
Yeah. I feel like if it's first game against control, I wouldn't mind just dropping it then.
Okay, so you think it's worth the risk of just, like, dying to a piece of removal?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Renee, you agree?
I would prefer to play it on turn 5, but I could say playing it on turn 4 if you have nothing else to play because you need to start getting threats on the board somehow.
Yeah, it's very situational, of course.
Yeah, like, I feel like on turn 3 you want to be playing Courser.
Yeah.
And then turn 4 you should be playing Seadrino, so yeah, this is kind of your 5 drop.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, if you're playing against control and you drop this, you're almost trying to take a Dissolve out of their hand, and just, if they don't, then you've got an automatic thing that that Dissolve's going to bounce from, because you can just get it back.
And I think that one of the great things about Den Protector, it's such a good card anyway, but it allows you to play one-ofs. Like, he's got a one-of Crux of Fate, a one-of Dromoka's Command, and a one-of Read the Bones, because if those cards are good in any particular situation, you can just bring them back to your hand. And you don't need to run multiples of those cards. So, Den Protector just makes the whole rest of the deck that much better.
Everyone's life is better with Den Protector.
Mm-hmm, apparently. Red deck wins!
Yeah, that's what you're excited for.
Not really. Yeah, it's kind of a different list. Kind of not.
Hyung-Soo Kim.
Actually, there's one very unique addition to this list, so we should probably go through this.
All right, go for
Chad.
It. All right, I'll take it.
All right.
22 creatures. 3 Flamewake Phoenix, 4 Lightning Berserker, 4 Monastery Swiftspear, 4 Thunderbreak Regent, 4 Eidolon of the Great Rebel, 3 Zergo Bellstriker, 21 Mountains, 17 spells in the form of 4 Lightning Strike, 3 Searing Blood, 4 Stoke the Flames, 3 Titan Strength, 3 Wild Slash. And in the board, we've got 3 Outpost Siege, 3 Arc Lightning, 3 Bathe in Dragonfire, 3 Roast, and 3 Scouring Sands.
So the biggest thing that sticks out to me is Thunderbreak Regent.
Really? I would say Flamewake Phoenix to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, Thunderbreak Regent is definitely... So, this deck is very interesting just because it's playing 4 Eidolon of the Great Rebel. It feels like you'd be hurting yourself a lot more than they would.
It depends, you know. Depends on what you're playing against.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, it can certainly hurt you because a lot of his spells are at 3 or less.
Yeah, everyone except for Stoke and Thunderbreak.
Yeah, but you know what? You can also consider Eidolon to be, like, just another lightning bolt, because he's got such a target on his back. As soon as you drop him, you just have to sit and wait for your opponent to kill him, and then just go back to business as usual.
I guess that's true.
And the Flamewake Phoenix is interesting, because there's really only 2 cards that can kind of trigger him coming back, and that's the Thunderbreak Regent, and then a Lightning Berserker if you pump it up enough.
Well, you also have your Titan Strengths that could potentially make it happen.
Yeah, that makes sense. But, yeah, that inclusion is interesting.
Yeah.
But it works. And, yeah, I find Thunderbreak Regent to be quite the addition to a deck like this, because normally you don't see their curves going up to 4 mana. Like, they normally stop at 2.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 3 with Phoenixes. So, it's different.
Yeah, and because of that reason, this is a deck I wouldn't mind sleeving up and trying.
Yeah, I kind of like this more than Atarka Red, honestly. I like the fact that he's actually playing Outpost Siege on the board.
Yeah.
It's a favorite card of mine. Renee, you're awfully quiet over there.
I don't have the brain power to figure out a red deck.
And see, that's the funny thing, too, because it used to be like the red decks were just the mindless. Any Timmy player can play it and just roll in and steal some wins, but now they say it's one of the more complicated decks to play.
I've never had the mindset to play a mono red deck. So I sit here and I look at it and I'm like, why don't you do this? And why are you doing this? And I'm sure there's a reason for it, and I just don't get it. I always respect the red players because it's like, I couldn't do it. I tried and I failed miserably.
And fun fact, for those of you that think, oh, this is a nice budget-friendly deck, I can throw it together pretty cheap, no problem. Eidolon of the Great Revel in paper is almost $10, and on Magic Online is almost $20 each.
Because Eternal Format.
Yeah.
So, have fun with that.
So, moving on, in fifth place, we have another Mono Red Aggro by Tristan Pulzel. I'm guessing that's how you say it.
Pulse? That one's completely beyond me.
So, it's a little different. It's kind of... I even call this Mono Red Goblins, because there's so many more goblins than there are in any other deck. But 19 creatures, 4 Foundry Street Denizen, 2 Goblin Heel Cutter, 2 Goblin Rabble Master, why only 2, 3 Lightning Berserker, 4 Monastery Swift Spear, 2 Eidolon of the Great Revel, 2 Zergo Bell Striker, 21 Mountains. And in the spells, it's got 4 Lightning Strike, 4 Stoke the Flame, 4 Wild Slash, 1 Hall of Triumph, which I really like in the main, 4 Dragon Fodder, and 3 Hordling Outburst. In the board, 2 Fire Drinker Stater, haven't seen that too much, 1 Goblin Heel Cutter, 2 Goblin Rabble Master to complete, 2 Impact Tremors for those control matches.
Impact Tremors is just really good, period. I'm shocked it's not in the main.
Yeah. 3 Searing Blood, 1 Hall of Triumph, and 4 Roast.
So, just looking at the sideboard, I get every card that's in there except the Fire Drinker Seder. Why?
I don't know. That's a good question. Because he's only running 3 Lightning Berserker, which is basically the same thing.
Yeah. Which I feel like that's a better card, honestly. Yeah.
I almost wonder if Fire Drinker Seder is in there for the mirror matches. Because whenever Fire Drinker Seder is self damage, it deals that much damage to you. Or wait, no, that's...
Yeah, why would you want that in the mirror match?
That's wrong, too. I just read that totally wrong until I said something. Wow. Alright.
Lightning Strike your Fire Drinker Seder, you take 3 also?
That does seem bad. I don't get it. I don't get it.
I mean, clearly it's got to be in there for, like, the control-y decks, just, I guess, to get more quicker, aggressive creatures out there. But still, there's better options, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
Very strange. Maybe that's
especially
why you have
like, you could have in Taylor Swift Spear there.
Yeah? Well, no, he's got 4 of her in the main.
Oh, yeah, he does. No, I'm seeing it. Wow, I'm really doing good tonight, guys.
No worries. You could also make the argument he could run 2 more Bell Strikers.
Yeah, or Eidolons. He's only got 2 Eidolons in the main.
True.
So,
or more Heel Cutters.
Yeah.
Yeah, so something possessed him to put these 2 Fire Drinker Shaders in the sideboard, and I'm just not getting it.
Mardu Scout. Why not run Mardu Scout?
Yeah. A lot of options. And that's Red Deck Wins!
Moving on to 6, who wants to take a chop at this one?
What's their name? Oh, we'll give this one to Jason, since he can probably pronounce this one.
Is this Hugo?
No.
No. Christian.
Christian.
Alright, TCG players got me all messed up. So this is Christian Hawk. Nice name.
Sounds
with Abzan Aggro.
Abzan Aggro.
I'm not going to talk about this deck. We've already talked about this deck.
All right, I want to make one mention.
Okay.
In the board, Self-Inflicted Wound.
Mm-hmm.
This card is amazing.
Well, yeah, that was in the board of the first place deck, too, right?
Every time you see Self-Inflicted Wound, you're like, this card is amazing.
Maybe that's it. It's just,
Chet's,
I'm on board.
He's doing just as good as I am.
Chet's got a lot of love for this card. I'll just say that.
I do. It's so... All right, I just want to make mention because it takes out Ojutai. It takes out almost all of the Dragon Lords. It takes out Siege Rhino. There's Courser, Dem Protector, like whatever you need. It's just such a good card right now that I think a lot more boards should be seeing it played.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, green and white are both very popular colors right now. So, yeah, this obviously is going to be an incredible hoser card against them. Is this something... Oh, go ahead, Renee.
I was going to say, out of this cycle, we see Self-Inflicted Wound the most, but I'm really surprised we're not seeing more Display of Dominance.
That's the white one?
No, that's the green one, where you not only can destroy blue or black permanent, but also ignore damage done by blue or black source, something to that effect.
Yeah, I think the thing that brings that down is that it's a non-creature permanent. That's...
Mm-mm. I don't think so, is it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. So, alright, we're going to look this up.
Yeah, now I'm curious.
Alright, while they look that up, we're going to move on to 7th place with Abzan Megamorph.
Abzan Megamorph.
This was...
Oh, it is non-creature permanent.
Yeah, so that's what's really holding that one back.
Oh, no.
Sorry.
Ashiok does a lot of work.
Yeah, that is really true. Alright, so...
Abzan Megamorph won by 7th place by Jasper... Grimmer. I think this is where Abzan should be.
Do you know?
I do. I think that Abzan aggro should always play for Death Mist and for Den Protectors.
This is an aggro.
Alright, well...
Well, neither is Abzan aggro!
So...
This is just as aggro as the first place Abzan aggro.
I'm totally joking with you and the naming conventions going on here.
I don't care. I'm a Magic player. I have the right to be angry about something.
Yeah, you do.
Abzan Megamorph is definitely where I see everything going forward. Just because it matches up when you board so well against all the control decks. And it's got the win con. It's got multiple win cons in the main.
Hidden Dragon Slayer, though, right?
The one-off? All right, I'll give this one, this is worth it, a one-off Hidden Dragon Slayer. The other deck, I didn't really like it just because on Collected Company, you're not hitting its ability.
True, yeah, you're not actually able to morph it.
Yeah.
But with Collected Company, you ship it back into the deck and you get it again.
Yeah, what she said. Everything all right over there?
Where? Me? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm crying. No, I'm good. But, yeah, so Jasper Grimmer in 7th place with Abzan Megamorph.
Yeah, I like this deck, actually. It's really good.
8th place, we've got Hugo Deniz? Deniz?
Either Deniz or Deniz. One of the two.
All right. Renee, you want to hit this one?
Yeah, sure. We've got Green Red Devotion.
Different.
A little, yeah. But guess what it has?
It's got your favorite.
3 Death Mist Raptor.
No.
We also have 4 Elvish Mystic, 4 Genesis Hydra, 1 Hornet Queen, 4 Rattleclaw Mystic, 4 Sylvan Caryatid, 4 Whisperwood Elemental, 4 Corsair of Krufix, 3 Dragonlord of Thakra.
Yeah.
And 3 Pelucranos, World Omnomer. And then we've got... What?
Where's Den Protector?
She stayed home for Mother's Day.
Okay, fair enough.
Oh, that's nice. I like that.
Death Mist Raptor said, I got this, Mom. You stay home, have a nice, you know, breakfast in bed.
It was more like, Mom, I can do this by myself.
You take a break because everything in the graveyard is useless.
Yeah. Except for maybe Hornet Queens.
True.
And then we also have 2 Xenagos the Reveler. So not Xenagod, obviously less important on my scale. We have 24 lands, and then we have a sideboard of 1 Arbor Colossus, 2 Ashcloud Phoenix, 2 Den Protectors. See, Mom didn't stay home completely. She kind of followed you. 2 Hornet's Nest, 4 Nylea's Disciples, 2 Nissa Worldwaker, 1 Ugin the Spirit Dragon, and an extra Xenagos the Reveler.
Cool. Nice. Yeah, we've seen these green splashing red devotion lists before. This guy decided 3 Dragonlord of Tarkas was the way to be, and why not add Death Mist Raptor?
I wish we could call it green red monsters again.
Yeah.
There isn't a single... Oh, wait, no, there are 4 humans in this total, in the form of Rattleclaw Mystics.
Yeah, I mean, it's all subjective. We can really call it whatever we want. But...
Green, red, get things from Genesis Hydra.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's got four Nykthos in the main. Yeah, that's what it wants to do.
You just want to go find that Dragon Lord.
Yep.
Yep.
And then you want to have Xenagod and be able to swing in with the 1616. Trampling Hasty. All right, I'm going a little too far off into Dream World here. So, what's next?
So next we've got 9th through 16th. We can just run down these.
Yeah, I can tell you 9th is identical. I'm looking at Abzan Control by Paul Berthet.
Yep.
And
yep.
It's identical to an Abzan Control we saw earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So no need to even go through that. We have something, at least according to TCG Player, which is actually labeled Abzan Midrange from Lucas... something else.
So on Magic, they Lucas Dick Jobs Street.
Dick Jobs.
Now, hold on, let me guess. They call this Abzan Megamorph, right?
They do.
Whoa, how'd you know?
Because I'm looking at the list and I'm seeing all the Megamorphs.
Oh, yeah. It's got two of your Dragon Slayers. The Den Protectors, yep.
Hey, a Murderer's Cut.
Hey, where'd that come from?
I know, right?
And no yawning, for God's sakes.
I'm sorry.
So, why don't we just hop down to the list that everybody was talking about all weekend?
Katsuko Kube.
Eh?
What?
Well, because it's GP first, so, I just translated, four Kokoko into four Ko-Kube.
I'm so confused.
I guess if you understand French, then you get that, but I'm lost.
Alright, I'll go over here now.
So we've got Four Color Collection Company by Johan Dudo Gnon. Oh, God. Sorry, man.
Go on, just go through the deck.
Okay, so this, I don't know if it was this guy or if it was somebody else that was playing this deck and went 9-0 on day one.
I think it was him.
Okay, it was Johan. Okay, and obviously everybody all over Facebook, Twitter was talking about this list. So this is a four-color collected company list. It's basically a Teemer / Jeskai collected company list. So I'll go ahead and run through this. We've got creatures in the way of four Fleece Mane Lion, four Goblin Rabble Master, four Mantis Rider, three Rattleclaw Mystic, four Savage Knuckleblade, three Seeker of the Way. So that's a hell of a creature suite there. He's got one Elspeth Sun's Champion. For spells, he's got four Collected Company, because duh. Two Dromoka's Command, two Ojitai's Command. What?
Nice.
Three Stoke the Flames, two Valorous Dance. He's running 24 lands. In the board, he's got three Arashan Clerics, three Disdainful Strokes, one more Dromoka's Command, four Horned Nest, two Negates, another Ojitai's Command, and one Treasure Cruise. Guys, this deck looks awesome.
Yeah, this
I love
looks
it.
Extremely fun. I'd like to mention that it's running three Mana Confluence, four Frontier Bivouac, and four Mystic
Bivouac.
Monastery.
Yeah.
Bivouac? Okay. And four Mystic Monastery. So, yeah.
This is the ultimate hybrid of Teemer and Jeskai.
This deck looks awesome.
Yeah, I'm just imagining some of the combinations of, okay, end of your turn, collected company, and just some of the possibilities of cards you could flip on this. I'm envisioning Savage Knuckleblade and Goblin Rabble Master, or Savage Knuckleblade and Mantis Rider.
Yeah, I like that combo right there.
Yeah, it's just, oh, God.
So
then, and then even if you don't have the collected company, I'm going to Ojutai's Command.
You got it.
Hard.
Yeah.
And return a Fleece Mane Lion to the battlefield.
So gross.
Not only that, but every one of his spells is an instant. So at the end of their turn, you can Stoke the Flames, Ojutai's Command, like Renee was talking about, Dromoka's Command, you can collect a company, then Dromoka's Command, you can collect a company, then Stoke the Flames. There's so many options.
Yeah. And obviously, he's a four-colored deck, so lands are very important. And as Chad mentioned, four Frontier Bivouac and four Mystic Monastery. In addition to the three Mana Confluence, he's got a few Temples, four Windswept Heaths, Yavimaya Coast, So he's all over the place with lands, but he needs to be. And he's got no creatures to give him mana fixing, no Sylvan Carrier.
Yeah, he does. Reliquaw Mystic.
True.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Another thing to mention is that Ojutai's command can get a Fleeceman Lion back to the battlefield from the graveyard and a Reliquaw Mystic.
And a Seeker of the Way.
That's correct. Also a Seeker of the Way.
So
you're either hitting everything off of Collected Company or the exact things you need for that situation off of an Ojutai's command.
Yeah.
So, and I've been very high on Ojutai's command since it first came out, and I've been playing decks with four Ojutai's command, but I love it in this deck, and I'm glad to see it actually getting some play finally. The four Stoke the Flames, I don't know, I guess that's just kind of to get you over the top, just get in that last bit of damage.
Yeah, if you hit a Mantis Rider off Collected Company or two early on, then Stoke the Flames can easily win you the game.
Yeah. So
look who's in the sideboard. Our friend Arashan Cleric.
Mm-hmm. He's pretty good to bring back with Ojutai's Command, I've found. You know, if you're hurting for life, you can Ojutai's Command to bring him back and gain four life. So that's seven life and a body right then and there.
Not that bad at all.
That's a nice big middle finger to Redneck Wins. What you got, bro?
More burn.
Yeah. Atarka's Command. Anyway. Awesome deck. I'm really happy to see this, and I would imagine we're going to see a lot more of this going forward.
I love your Collected Company.
Yeah. Collected Company it's everywhere right now. It's even in Modern. Won first place at a Modern event a week ago.
Oh, I'm so excited to play it.
Yeah.
I'm not playing that version, though. I'm playing a different version.
Sure, but it's still good regardless. Modern, Standard, whatever.
Because guess what came in 12th?
Collected Company!
Just green white, though. He wasn't getting all crazy. Javier Dominguez.
Yeah, biggest difference I'm seeing here is the inclusion of Boonsader.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really good.
Yeah, he wants to do all the stuff at the end of your turn. And he ain't losing to control.
Nope.
So, good times.
All right. And then 13th place with Manuel Fabers is Green Devotion with Red. That's an interesting way to phrase it.
Yeah. But is this still the same Atarka? Yep.
Yep.
Though he is running some combination of Death Mist Raptor and Den Protector in the main.
Yeah.
Not much of it, but it is there.
In 14th, we have our first viewing of Esper Dragons by Robin Dillard.
And he is up to the four Ojutai's, which we've been kind of seeing it trending that way.
Yeah.
And only one Dragonlord Salumgar, so not even Salumgar the Drifting Death, which I find to be surprising. In fact, he doesn't have Drifting Death in all of the 75s, which I gotta say, that feels really wrong to me. What do you guys think?
The less Salumgar I have to deal with, the better.
True.
I feel like you're going to be holding Dragonlord Salumgar for their biggest creature or for their biggest permanent, and that's why you don't really need the older body.
God, I don't know, man. I mean, that card alone can really seal the deal in a lot of games. The hexproof alone is just amazing.
He is running three Bioblight, so maybe he feels that he doesn't need it due to that.
I strongly disagree with that. So, I'll leave it at that. Play Drifting Death.
So, in 15th, we've got another Esper Dragons build. He's running Salumgar the Drifting Death.
There we go.
And
right.
Three Dragon Lord Ojutai. He did worse. In 16th, we have our first showing of Mardu Dragons.
I'm excited for this.
I accidentally hit the button for draw sample hand, because on Magic the Gathering you can draw a sample hand of each of these.
Sure.
And I would keep it. It's pretty amazing. So.
The biggest difference I wanted to note from this, as opposed to other lists we've seen before, is this one is bringing back Goblin Rabble Master, and he's also bumping Soulfire Grandmaster up to a full four, whereas some were kind of flirting with two Soulfires and no Rabble Masters. This guy, he's all in on both. And he's actually running two Kolaghan's Command, another card I'm starting to soften up to.
Yeah, this card is so good.
Yeah, I think it's very underrated right now.
Right now, I just consider it a mini Blightning for those of you that know what Blightning is, but it's very good. Very good card in the current standard at the moment.
Yeah, and it's instant speed, whereas Blightning is sorcery.
True.
My sample hand, probably significantly worse than yours.
Yeah.
I only got one land.
Oh, ship it back. Get six.
Steal another.
And we got. And I just want to say, if we haven't mentioned this before on the show, having Soulfire Grandmaster out on the battlefield, a dragon in your hand, and then casting Draconic Roar is pretty awesome.
Yeah, or Falchion
Invocation.
Even better.
Yeah. No. Even better, Crackling Doom.
Oh, yes.
Do you think so?
Yeah. Well, then if it's one of the aggro decks.
Oh, I'm dead.
What the hell happened?
I'm so fat. My chair broke.
Oh, God.
Really?
No. It just, like, I had it in the upright position. And I went to lean back, and it was like, no, okay, you can go. So
all I heard was, boom, boom.
Yeah.
Anyway, Crackling Doom, when you do two to each creature, you get those two life.
No, it's opponent. So you're dealing two to each opponent. So you're only getting two, but they sacrifice a single creature.
I think you're thinking the interaction with Anger of the Gods, where Anger of the Gods deals three damage to each creature. And if you have Soulfire Grandmaster out, you gain that three life for all of those creatures hit.
Now I can't freaking find Crackling Doom. I saw Crackling Doom. I pulled it in one of these opening hands.
All right. For those of you who don't remember, Crackling Doom is an instant. Mardu colors, a red, a white, and a black. Crackling Doom deals two damage to each opponent. Each opponent sacrifices a creature with the greatest power amongst creatures he or she controls.
Maybe I pulled this out in an EDH match, and that's why
it must have.
So.
It must have been. So
that may be why.
Well, that would be pretty impressive.
But yeah, Soulfire Grandmaster with a lot of these cards is really good. Just saying.
And Crackling Doom in EDH is amazing.
And Mardu is good. Play Mardu. We like Mardu, though only two outpost creatures in the sideboard seems wrong.
One out of three people like Mardu here, so.
I don't mind Mardu.
I like
that's where Renee was playing it not too recently, right?
I had it with me at the GP for all I got to play of it.
I like Kolaghan's Command, but that can be put in Jund, so I'm kind of in that direction.
Okay.
Anyway, so what were we moving on to?
I think that was it, right?
Yeah, that was it for the Grand Prix Paris.
In Texas.
And, well, I think Renee's put us in a place at this point.
I'm about ready to flip tables.
Table flip. So,
So, corrections and omissions. Last week, yes, we didn't know what the hell we were talking about. Toronto or something.
Sao Paulo?
Yeah.
Which is in Spain?
I think it was kind of unfair because the first place was the same name as the place that he played at. So, I'm going to go with that.
We here at Higher Standards do not promote racism, nor do we employ racists.
That's
so.
Right. So I will not be here next
nor
time.
Nor have either of you passed the geography test.
Yeah.
No, I got done with that in high school a long time ago. But so moving on, as Jason might have mentioned, all of us at one point or another were able to make it out to Grand Prix Atlantic City. For those of you on the Facebook group, if you're not on the Facebook group, join the Facebook group. That didn't go. That sucks. But if you were there, then you missed us. Or if you didn't miss us, you saw us and we were able to say what's up.
Yeah, I'm looking at you, Jason Leeper. Didn't come up and say hi at all. Thanks, bro.
He was too busy winning.
That's what it was.
I saw him.
Oh, there you go.
I saw him lots, but I see him every week.
Oh, okay. Grand Prix Atlantic City.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So do we want to just, like, go into what happened with us? And
no, let's just give a quick shout-out. It's at the beginning of the cast, so we're not. So we were playing, and we met two people that said that they heard of our cast, and
well, one person who told us about his friend who may or may not be listening to the cast.
Okay, so you go ahead then.
Yeah, so one of the guys that was working for TJ Collectibles over the weekend was Blake Theodore. And really cool guy. He was working the prize booth, which they had a really cool system for giving out prizes for side events. And Chad and I were just hanging around talking to Blake for a good portion of the evening after we finished with our event. And we were sitting there talking to him. We were asking him. I think eventually we kind of started hinting, oh, do you listen to any Magic podcasts? And I think he said, well, I listen to Limited Resources. And my friend Peter is trying to get me to listen to this other podcast. They're like a standard-only podcast. And Chad and I were like, is it Higher Standards? Because that's the podcast we do. And he's like, oh, my God, I think that's it. So we wanted to give a shout-out to Blake and then to his friend Peter Kragnoline.
Right? Yeah.
So what's up, guys?
Nice.
Thanks for listening to the show.
So before we get into what happened at Grand Prix Atlantic City, we're going to hit an MTGO list that Renee found.
Well, there's a couple of them. Yes. I don't know if you guys got to look at any of them.
I did. Some of them seemed pretty interesting, actually.
Is there any one in particular that you would like to talk about?
I like Caleb's.
Go for it.
All right, so Caleb D went 4-0 in a standard daily, and he is playing what seems to be a all-over-the-place deck. So he's got one Planeswalker in the form of Elspeth Sun's Champion, then he's got 14 creatures, 4 Courser of Kruphix, 3 Den Protector, 3 Dragonlord Ojutai, 4 Siege Rhino. Sorceries, he's got 5, 1 Crux of Fate, and 4 Thoughtseize, and for instance, he's got 14, 3 Abzan Charm, 3 Bileblight, 3 Disdainful Stroke, 3 Hero's Downfall, 1 Sultai Charm, and 1 Ultimate Price. He's got 26 lands. 1 Urborg and 2 Mana Confluence are the only off lands that I see. In the board, he's got another Elspeth, 3 Irashan Cleric, because that seems good in any deck anymore, 2 Duress, 3 Self-Inflicted Wound, because that also does, 1 Sultai, 3 Dramansar, 1 Negate, and 1 Treasure Cruise. What do you guys think about this?
So, earlier we were talking about a Jeskai, what other clan hybrid?
Teemer?
Yeah, Jeskai Teemer hybrid, where this is a Sultai Abzan hybrid. And it looks really good. It's kind of the best of all the worlds.
It has the best cards from each.
Yeah, really. It's Siege Rhino and Dragonlord Ojutai and Den Protector and Abzan Charm and Sultai Charm. I'm in.
That's nice. I like it.
Yeah. Very cool list.
I'm actually surprised that there aren't any Dramoka or Ojutai commands anywhere.
True.
Yeah, he may just not have had room. And really, he only has 2 lands that deal damage to him, the 2 mana confluence. He's not running any of the...
2 Yavimaya Coasts.
Yep, they're there at the bottom. So, 4 lands. But still, pretty good.
And some fetches. And 1 Llanowar Waste.
Alright, I'll shut up then.
He's got lands that deal damage to him, and...
but he has a lot of lands that don't.
Yeah. So, congrats.
Yeah, that's a pretty sweet list, honestly. At first, when I was looking through it, I'm like, oh, this is Bant. No, wait, there's black in it, too. Nice.
Actually, I overlooked something. He is running... So, it seems like the 4 colors are definitely running both of their supported clans' lands.
Yeah.
So, he's got 4 Opulent Palace and 4 Sandstep Citadel. Which, it seems like you want to be playing a slower type of deck, and he doesn't have any other than Den Protector, which you're going to be playing on 3 anyway. He doesn't have anything that's 2. Any creatures, at least.
Yeah, no, but I mean, it looks solid. There's probably times when he might be a little bit hurting for one color or another, but otherwise it's a very solid deck, and in the hands of the right player, I'm sure it's pretty badass.
Yeah.
Next was Tiki Panda.
And I actually pulled this one out for you.
Aw, thank you. it's a bit of a throwback, it looks like. It's kind of like, oh, this was standard 3 months ago. So it appears he is running a Mardu, we'll call it mid-range list. I'll go through it. He's running 4 Butcher of the Hordes, 4 Goblin Rabblemaster, 4 Seeker of the Way, 4 Soulfire Grandmaster. For sorceries, he's got 4 Hordling Outburst and an instance, 4 Crackling Doom, 1 Kolaghan's Command, 3 Lightning Strike, 1 Mardu Charm, 4 Stoke the Flames, 3 Wild Slash. Ah, good old style. Old school Mardu here. I like it. He's running 24 lands, and then in the board he's got one Glare of Heresy, three Outpost Siege. I like it. Two Storins, two Ultimate Price, one Cut, one Self-Inflicted Wound, four Thoughtseize, and one Valorous Stance. Yeah, this is straightforward old school Mardu. I like it. I like the return of Butcher of the Horde and Goblin Rabble Master. And, of course, Soulfire Grandmaster was a great addition to this deck.
I wonder with the Butcher of the Horde, because it seems like that's kind of relied upon here. Instead of running four Seeker, why not do a split between two Seeker and two Monastery Mentor?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because he's got enough instants and sorceries. So
yeah.
He would get plenty of triggers on that one. That's a good point. I don't know. Maybe he just didn't own any.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that this is wrong. I'm just wondering if you could do a split or try and see how it goes the other way.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but honestly, if I was going to make a substitution like that, I'd probably get rid of the Soulfire Grandmasters and just go for straight up Mentors.
I think Soulfire Grandmaster is just too pretty.
It is. It's. I love it. I think it's a fantastic card, but at the same time, it's not as valuable as you think it would be. Every once in a while, you get to live in magical Christmas land and actually recur some spells, but most of the time, it just gets killed as soon as you drop it.
Yeah, can see. But Tiki Panda, get in touch with us. We want to know why Foreseeker and not Four Monastery Mentor, because I'm super curious.
Yes, and nice deck. I like it.
Next, we have Game Shack, who I am sitting here trying to find again. There he is. And this is going back to our red-green decks, but I really like it, and you'll find out why. Probably
yeah.
Everyone will hear it really quickly.
Yeah, go ahead.
We've got 18 creatures. Two Atarka World Renderer, three Elvish Mystic, four Stormbreath Dragon, three Sylvan Caryatid, four Thunderbreak Regent, and two Xenagod!
Yeah.
Then we have five sorceries in the form of two Sea of the Unwritten and three Shamanic Revelation.
Nice.
That's the things you don't see often.
Nope.
Then we have 12 instants, 3 Back to Nature, 3 Ranger's Guile, 3 Stoke the Flames, and 3 Stubborn Denial.
All right.
And then we have 3 Frontier Siege as enchantments, and 22 lands, including 4 Haven of the Spirit Dragon.
Okay.
He does have a lot of dragons, so I can see that.
And then we have a mixture of the Teemer Scrylands, but none of the Teemer Triland.
Hmm.
So I thought that was interesting as well.
Yeah, because really his only blue in the main is Stubborn Denial, right?
Yeah. That's what it seems like.
Yeah.
Not even seeing anything that, like, activates off of blue.
Yep.
In the sideboard, we have 2 Anger of the Gods, 3 Destructive Revelry, because that is a card.
Yep.
2 Teemer Ascendancy, which everyone forgets about.
Yeah.
3 Courser of Krufix, 2 Dragonlord of Tarka, and 3 Teemer Charm.
Yeah, this deck looks pretty sweet, though. I'm really curious about the 3 Back to Nature in the main.
Yeah.
What is that about?
Just expecting to see a lot of Coursers
and Masteries, I guess?
Yeah.
It's a very interesting choice.
It might easily be a metagame call.
Yeah, it had to have been. I kind of wonder if maybe had he not put those in the main and maybe something else in there, he could have possibly done better because this was a 3-1 list.
Well, the interesting thing is he's got 3 Courser of Krufix in the board, and
yeah.
3, so obviously you know that Back to Nature's going away if he puts those in. So, yeah, it's nice.
Yeah. And Atarka World Render in the main, not Dragonlord Atarka.
The Unwritten gets there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and all your dragons having double strike, considering he's got 14 dragons in the main, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'd love to drop a Thunderbreak into Stormbreath into Atarka. That would be pretty awesome. And then
you got a Thunderbreak into Stormbreath into Xenagod into Atarka.
Oh, so savage. And then 3 Shamanic Revelation. I've always liked that card, but I never really saw it making an impact in Standard. I'm glad somebody's using it or putting it to good use.
I just think it's in an awkward meta spot.
Are you yawning again?
I am. I'm sorry. Sorry, someone kill me. Okay? Then I get to sleep forever.
Yeah.
I don't have to worry about 250 points. We can just let me sleep.
Do we need to get her some help?
No.
All right. They taught us this in the Air Force, and we need to look for signs. But anyway, Game Shark, good job. I really like your list. Why?
I might try this.
Yes. Back to nature, though. Better in the sun.
Yeah. I think we just put three destructive rivalries in the main instead.
Yeah, and as always, we will put links to this event in the show notes.
Yes.
Or Chad will.
I will.
Because I ain't doing shit this week.
Well, I'm definitely editing a curse word then. All right, so so you might as well say this. This is your thing, so go for it.
My thing?
Yeah. All right, I'll do it. Every week we ask the cast three questions, and we are going to put one of these questions into our group. So if you're not in the Facebook group, then join the Facebook group. And whose question are we going to use? We're going to use Jason's question.
Yes. I finally win. I don't know if I've ever had my question be the listener poll, but finally,
it's
mine.
So we'll just go in order. I'll just start out. And we've been talking about Collected Company a lot, and I don't think it's going to go down anytime soon. My question for the cast is Collected Company worth picking up before the next set is released? Or do we think the price tag will drop? Renee, how about you?
I don't think it'll drop. It's seeing play in too much modern.
Okay.
So I think you should pick them up now because people are still opening a lot of Dragons of Tarkir.
Mm-hmm.
So it's readily available, and that's what's keeping the price where it's at. I see once Dragons ends and people aren't opening it as much, it may be even going up a couple of bucks.
Nice.
And then once it rotates out, it going up quite a bit if it stays in modern, because you have Podless Pod with Collected Company.
Yeah, and that's probably the big reason.
I can't wait to play Podless Pod.
Jason, how about you?
This is an interesting question. It's actually a really good question. The problem is we've still got, 2 months of drafting Dragons before Origins comes out?
Yep.
So I think we're definitely not at peak supply as far as Collected Company goes. It's peaking right now because we've had both a modern tournament, get won by a Collected Company deck, and we've had a couple of big standard tournaments also have good showing with Collected Company. So I think we're on the back of a lot of hype right now. I think it will go down a little bit before it goes back up. Not by much. I think it may get back down to about $6, but I do agree with Renee, when this goes out of print and when we start drafting Origins, it's going to just keep going up because it's all part of that whole modern staple thing. Once something becomes a modern staple, it's very hard for its price to ever go back down unless it gets just a massive reprint like Thoughtseize and not like Modern Masters.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's long-term, great pickup. But I think it's got some room to go down a little bit before, it starts going up for good.
Okay. So, the last I checked, Collected Company, this is my answer, by the way. Last I checked, Collected Company foil is $25. $25 or $28. And the Collected Company regular is about $10. So, I think it's worth picking up right now. It's my answer to the question. And do I think the price tag will drop? I say yes, very minorly, like Jason was mentioning, on the normal one, but I think the foil is going to do nothing but raise. And because of the reason that it has been in modern, but it's much harder to find a foil copy of these things. So if you do, in fact, have foils, then I would say hold them until after the set completely rotates, or maybe longer, because those are going to skyrocket.
So you're saying I should hold on to mine then?
Yeah.
Okay.
So as you can see, my question was based on the question you asked over in Gamers Vault.
All right, fair enough.
So, Renee, you're up.
I guess I am. I know this isn't exactly what we do, but everyone's talking about it.
Of course.
What do you guys think of Modern Masters 2? Go ahead, Jason, since you talked about this with somebody else this week.
Okay, the problem I have with these Modern Masters sets is the fact that either Wizards jacks up the price or the retailers jack up the price. Regardless, making it not an easy set to draft or play a sealed in without breaking the bank. Which, I respect the fact that they built these as limited sets, and I would love to play these as limited sets, but not at the price I'm going to have to pay. And I'm not going to go out and buy boxes of these. If there's any cards from these sets that I want to pick up, I'm going to pick them up maybe 3 to 4 weeks after the set comes out to play in Modern. But the reality is I'd love to play them as limited formats, but I'm not going to pay $45 or more dollars to draft Modern Masters 2. I get what they're trying to do, and I appreciate it, but at the same time, I'm not going to be paying much into this set.
Alrighty, go ahead, Chad.
So, I think this set looks really well put together. I loved the first one. I was able to draft some of it on MTGO, because like Jason said, I wouldn't want to draft it in paper because it costs too much, but MTGO, it's kind of a fluctuating price difference, so it's easier to just hawk out the money knowing that it will always be in your pool. And all the cards, especially the mythics in there, are amazing, except for Comet Storm. But all the mythics in there are very worth the price. If you're able to draft on MTGO, I would suggest it just for a couple reasons. One, it's going to show you how to draft a lot better, because you're going to be playing with people that are willing to pay the money, and if they are, that means they're going to draft to win. So there's a lot of ways you can go with the set. And because of that reason, drafting in limited for our next set for Origins is going to teach you maybe this is a combo, or maybe this is the direction I can go, or you'll open up ideas for other people that can play. So I like the set overall, and I'm definitely going to draft a couple times on MTGO.
Well, I feel like I'm the only person who isn't super impressed by this set. because, I mean, like, it's supposed to be a draftable format, and you can't play Daybreak Coronet if you happen to draft it.
Okay, there is that flaw.
Like, and Mario was saying something about it was supposed to be included in Theros, but it pushed the power level too much, so it got pushed back to Modern Masters 2. And it's like, did you guys really just kind of throw whatever you couldn't get pushed out somewhere else into this set?
Yeah.
And if so, where is all of these other cards? Like, Serum Visions, okay, we're getting a FNM promo of that. Wow, Black Wrath. What's the Black
Wrath? Damnation. Rock?
There we go, thank you.
Yeah,
I had a total blank.
Yeah, I mean, that was a recent Judge promo, but those are not really mass distributed.
Exactly.
So it's not going to affect the price at all.
If anything, it's going to drive it up more.
Yeah.
So I don't feel like this set did what the first one did. Okay. Which was even temporarily bring the price of these cards down.
But then the irony was it shot almost all of the prices up over time.
Because suddenly Modern was more accessible to people. Yeah. I am not going to be playing in a lot of events with this set because it is so expensive. Most sealed events that are going on are somewhere between $70 to $90 and paying out in Dragons packs.
Yeah.
which that's the worst thing, because a lot of the local stores here, they're running these events with Modern Masters 2015, but they're not paying out in that product, which I think is crap. I mean, if you're going to be paying these prices, then you should be getting Modern Masters packs as payout.
True.
Yeah, and the what I got, well, Trevor told me about this today. There's going to be a store in Pennsylvania doing $50 drafts. And everyone sits in a pod of 8 and plays within that pod, and then the first person goes on to another pod.
Wow.
And so then they build an 8-person pod of that, and, you know, just keep going until they finally have a winner like that, almost like you would be doing day 2 of a GP.
Yeah.
But there's prizes for everyone.
Nice.
So it's not just, you know, one person gets all these Modern Masters packs. It's everyone in every pod gets something, from extra Modern Masters packs to store credit.
Very cool.
Which I think is a lot better of a way to do these events, and that's the only thing I'm going to be playing in, because it's just not worth it to do everything else.
Yeah, absolutely.
Trevor convinced me to spend money on this thing, and that's... I'm already regretting that decision.
And, I mean, really, I can't blame Wizards for making the MSRP $10 a pack, because the retailers were doing that anyway, so yeah. Wizards might as well make their money, but I think it's... I don't know. I think they're going to not have nearly as much demand for this set as they did the last one. Plus, word is, this one's getting a much higher print run than the previous Modern Masters. So, we'll see how this all folds out.
And I'm not going to hold out for Modern Masters 2017 to get reprints of things.
Yeah.
I'm done with this.
Though, I do need to reacquire Snapcaster Mages in one form or another.
Have fun with that.
God, they're getting ridiculous. It's bad. It's really bad.
You know, so Trevor will tell everybody this story, so I may as well put it out there.
Sure.
When we first started getting back into Magic, Liliana the Veil was finally starting to see play in Core Set 13. And he bought... 4 of them online for $20 a piece, and I yelled at him at the time. And now they're like $100.
So now he's like, oh, in your face!
Yeah, exactly. And same with Snapcaster Mages. Like, we bought 4 of those for a pittance now, but what I thought at the time was a terrible amount of money. And now it's like, oh, well, if we ever, like, you know, completely break down financially again, we'll just sell off Snapcaster Mages and be fine for a month.
Yeah. So that's money in the bank right there.
Oh, yeah.
Very nice. All right, so I got a question as well. I've been kind of reminiscing back to the actual Cons of Tarkir set. I know we've had a lot of excitement with Fate Reforged and Dragons of Tarkir, but there's still a lot of cards and cons that I was either optimistic about or some other people were optimistic about, and they never really saw the light of day. So my question to you guys is, and this is going to be the listener poll, so my question to all the listeners as well is, which of the following Cons of Tarkir cards still have breakout potential while they're still in standard? So I listed 5 cards here. The first one was Narset, Enlightened Master. We have also got Villainous Wealth, Mardu Ascendancy, Abzan Ascendancy, and Hooded Hydra. So, let's start with Chad. What do you think here?
So, I always thought, out of the cards that you named, Hooded Hydra was going to be a breakout card.
Yep.
Due to the devotion, and you can pump so much into it, plus it just, a wrath does nothing to it. So, I think Hooded Hydra, like, the more I look at it, and because of the rotation, even though it's still going to be in here, I don't think Hooded Hydra is going to do anything, but I'm hoping that Villainous Wealth would make some kind of impact, just because Soul Tie will still be a thing. Blue-Black Control is a thing. And the fact that it can easily take over a game is one thing. I think all the other cards you named are very good cards, but they don't have an instant win condition. And Villainous Wealth is one of the ones that does. So I believe I'd pick Villainous Wealth out of the 5 you named.
Cool. All right. I like it. Renee?
So I thought Abzan Ascendancy would do something, but it only does really good things when it enters the battlefield.
Yeah.
It's not one of those when a creature or a spell is cast effects. And then the other thing it does is when a creature dies.
Yeah.
There isn't, I mean, Den Protector kind of recurs creatures, but there isn't a good sac outlet.
Mm-hmm.
So if we get a good sac outlet, I could see this happening.
Okay. So Abzan Ascendancy is your choice, or?
No.
Okay.
It's my, I'm not very optimistic.
Oh, okay.
I really like the Hydras, but he's just so, like, meh compared to the other Hydras.
Sure.
And I'm going to go with Villainous Wealth as well, because I thought that with all of the green devotion running around, you could just splash black and blue into there, play a couple of Ashioks, and totally then ramp up and villainous wealth for all of the cards.
Yeah. It's, you would think, and there was, again, a lot of excitement. I was very excited about that card. But my card that I'm going to put on this list is Narset, Enlightened Master. I've read her over and over again, and I sit here and think, how is this not just an amazing card in Standard? Because I guess it's because she's expensive, but she's got Hexproof, she's got First Strike, and whenever she is declared as an attacker, you have the potential to cast four cards from your library. More than likely, it's going to be more like two. But you get to cast them without paying their casting cost. That seems really good. And it seems like there are so many ways you could abuse that, and nobody's done it.
You have to remember, it's non-creatures.
True. But I don't know. I just feel like that there should be some way to abuse that, and nobody's doing it. Maybe we just don't have the right pieces together yet, but Narset, Enlightened Master, is definitely my choice for this list.
So I feel the pieces that we do have were very built towards the Ascendancy.
Right.
She isn't built towards the Ascendancy.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, there's not a lot of synergy there between her and the Ascendancy itself.
So.
Fair enough. And so, that will be our listener poll.
Yeah, that will be our listener poll. One thing, I've seen Narset be used with the Take an Extra Turn card.
Yeah, okay.
The Delve one?
Yeah.
Ooh. All right, I like that.
So I've seen that done before. And it worked out really well. He had a couple of other cards like Double Strike or things like that, but it just seemed like the other deck was able to run him over before he was able to get Narset online.
Yeah, I can see it. Because, yeah, she has six, so she's not that easy to cast. Maybe she'll be a Commander All-Star, but either way,
yeah,
I want to see more Narset.
All right, so this is the point where we're going to talk about GP Atlantic City. It's limited, but we all enjoyed ourselves. I was there Friday. Jason and Renee were there Friday and Saturday. Renee, you want to go over any of the iconic moments you had?
So Saturday, I got to build an awesome Naya deck.
Nice.
And whenever I walked up to somebody I knew and was like, I built an awesome Naya deck, they were like, how could you have possibly built an awesome Naya deck? And then they saw it and they're like, this is crazy. And I built my awesome Naya deck by having two Arash and Foremost, a Yasova Dragonclaw, some other green guy, a bunch of white guys, and a red guy.
Yeah.
That all were warriors.
Nice.
I think I only had two cards that weren't warriors. And Arash and Foremost reads, whenever Arash and Foremost enters the battlefield or attacks, give another warrior double strike.
Yeah, and she's a rare. And as I'm flipping through, when you showed me your deck, and I'm flipping through and I saw two of those, I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. That is pretty damn amazing.
It was amazing. Yeah. And the Yasova's a warrior.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then I just had ways to put counters on her, because I also had Citadel Siege. So I had at one point a 10-8 Yasova. With double strike, and I'm just like, I'm going to steal your thing now.
How did you just not 9-0 day one?
So, I didn't 9-0 day one because in round three, I got incredibly sick.
Oh, that sucks.
So I had to drop because at one point in time, I looked up at my opponent and was about to say, you might want to duck. I feel like I'm going to throw up.
God.
So after I... And then throughout the match, I couldn't add numbers. Like, I lost because I forgot how to add. I was in so much pain.
You were just in that much pain.
Yeah.
So I wound up dropping for the day and then spending the rest of the day in the hotel room, which was a lot of fun. You have no idea.
Oh, sure. Well, there's a big magic event going on right next door.
I know, right? And I'm hearing people in the hallways talk about their awesome pools. Yep. No, no idea how much fun I had. And thankfully, I'm going in for surgery tomorrow/Thursday, depending on when y'all hear this, to hopefully get this fixed so I can stop dropping from events and dude not being well. Because I'm really getting tired of spending a lot of money to get a lot of Planeswalker points, and then my body being like, no.
Yeah,
that sucks. So, yeah, we're hoping everything goes well and your recovery is swift, and you can get back to stomping face with Erasian Foremost and Citadel Siege.
I know, I need that pull again.
Yeah, I mean, that pull was sick, just completely sick. Like, you should have day two'd no problem if you were able to stay in.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people said that who had both, like, been watching me play this deck, and my friends who had looked at it, they're like, you should stay in, you'll day two. And I'm like, I've done this B-Sick and play Magic before at Richmond, and I day two'd. I really don't have the energy to do it again.
Yeah. So, yeah, get yourself fixed and get back to Stomp and Face.
I know. I'm so ready for that. But Sunday, then, I played some EDH before we left because Trevor had a few things to tie up on site because he judged all weekend. Well, he judged Friday, and then he sat at the Welcome Center Saturday.
Okay.
So if you saw the guy out front in a red shirt and glasses, that was Trevor.
Yay.
He says the one with the bandana.
Of course.
Yeah, I got to play, like, a 8-person EDH pod, which normally I hate those size pods, but everyone was having a lot of fun, and we had 2 group hug decks in the mix, so that always makes it interesting.
Did you actually finish?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, we did finish. It was like an hour and a half game where eventually I was like, Wave of Vitriol, which is a nasty green card, and everyone was just kind of like, well, all right. So.
Cool.
That was my weekend.
All right. Well, and Chad and I had a really good night Friday night. If you're on the Facebook group, you already know that Chad and I joined the, what was it called, the two-headed giant.
Double Trouble.
Double Trouble, which this was the last big event that they held on Friday night, and it ended up being 32 teams playing a sealed two-headed giant event. So 64 players total. I'll just give you a rundown. Recent Pro Tour winner Martin Dang was playing in that with his girlfriend, as well as a bunch of SCG Open Grinders whose names I can't seem to remember right now, but I recognize their faces. I see their faces every time I go to one of these big events. So no slouches here, and when the final standing sheet was printed out, Chad and I were number one.
Yeah.
Yeah, we ended up taking down the tournament, so Chad... What do you have to say about this? This was pretty awesome.
So like Jason said, there were people that were playing with their girlfriends, and I think if... before
I was
we...
playing with mine, so...
Oh, very nice. So before we go into this any further, if you're trying to show somebody how to play Magic, maybe a friend, maybe a partner, then it's two-headed giant is the way to go. It's one of those things that you guys can talk, it's... not against the rules. You guys share a life total. You share the cards between each one of you, and it's really enjoyable to do. Jason and I have done this in the past at different comic stores, and we've done really well. I don't know why, but him and I have a certain synergy that we're able to understand what the other player wants to do before they even make that decision.
Yeah.
So. We kind of know exactly what steps we want to take in order to win the game. And
yeah, so and let's think about this. How many times have you and I played in a two-headed giant event together? Mostly at pre-releases, but
yeah.
I think it's been at least 8, right?
Yeah, about 8.
And at least half of those we took down.
I think we've won 6 total, 6 yeah. out of 8. And, yeah, we do really well when we play together. This sounds very awkward, but it's probably as good as the synergy between Renee and Trevor. But
Trevor and I are convinced that you need to play two-headed giant before you propose or get married to somebody.
There you go.
Exactly. Like
that. So we got our pulls, and this was another thing. Normally with a pre-release, you get 2 boxes, so you get 2 six packs.
Yeah,
so you're splitting
pool and everything else. So you,
so
you get a lot more.
Yeah, you're splitting 12 packs between 2 players, so there's a ton of different variants that you can do. And we just put them together each way. Now, at the GP, and these, I believe, are the two-headed giant rules. Trevor can correct me if I'm wrong, but you get only 8 packs, so 4 packs between players. The split was 6-2, 6 Dragons of Tarkir, and 2 Fate Reforged.
So, yeah, you're much more limited as to what how many cards you get compared to, like, a pre-release. So
it's a lot more challenging to do it at a not pre-release.
Yeah, and our pool, when we opened our cards, was very just, yeah. It was nothing spectacular.
No bombs.
And, in fact, I'm in the process of writing out, like, what our deck lists were and what the rest of our pool was, and I'm going to be posting it on the Higher Standards Facebook group so you can all see. But, yeah, I mean, it was not that great. We had a couple of good bombs, but overall, I mean, Chad, I'm sure you would agree with me, we had to work our asses off to win every single round. Like, we had to really grind out each game, and we had to really play perfectly.
Yeah.
Because we did not just get those crazy bombs, with maybe one exception.
Yeah, so normally I play the control matchup because that's what I feel comfortable with in Standard or any other format I play. And Jason usually goes along the aggro or the midrange.
Yep, and this was no different. Chad went blue-black, and I ended up going Jeskai colors, primarily red and white, with a lot of aggro and big creatures, just splashing blue for Pristine Skywise and Shu Yun, the Silent Tempest, because we got those two in our pool and a Singleton Tranquil Cove.
Yep.
So it was one of us was going to be splashing a color. So we figured it was better for me to splash the blue than Chad to splash the white.
Yeah.
So I'd say as far as bombs go, the best card in this situation that we got was Sunscorch Regent.
He's really good.
Yeah, especially in a two-headed giant game. When you've got two opponents, when each of them casts a spell, we gain a life and he gets a counter. But he had such a big target on his back, which if we didn't have another certain card in Chad's deck, then he never would have survived and we probably would have lost a lot more games. And that was
Stratus Dancer.
Yes. Stratus Dancer was by far the MVP of that tournament. Would you agree, Chad?
Yeah, it definitely took people by surprise. They felt like they could take care of anything we had on board, and as soon as they tried it, Stratus Dancer would flip and counter it, as well as beat their face as a 3-2 in the air.
Yeah, 3-2 flyer isn't terrible for his cost, and then the fact that you get to counter one of their removal spells, very relevant. We would use that to protect like either my Sunscorch Regent, or I also had the Atarka guy, that makes all your creatures have to be blocked by two or more.
No, Pummeler?
Atarka Pummeler. So I'd have one of those cards out. They go to remove it. Chad flips the Stratus Dancer, and then we just start beating face. And that was kind of how the whole tournament went. We had to grind out some games. Some of them were really close, especially the last round. But we ended up going undefeated. And, yeah, like I said, when the standings came out, we were number one out of 32 teams.
Yeah, we took it down. I'd like to mention our round three players was the most interesting and enjoyable game I've ever played of Magic.
Yes, absolutely.
So Jason was sitting on my right, and the opponent across from me was deaf. And it's something that I've never seen before. I've seen deaf people, I've known deaf people, but I've never played a deaf person in Magic before, because it's kind of hard to interact. And his partner, the player that was playing with him as the two-headed giant, was using sign language to make their decisions together, and it was awesome.
Yeah, and he was interpreting and everything through sign language. And it was really great. They were both very pleasant guys. I wish we had caught their names, because they were both really cool dudes. It was a hell of a lot of fun playing with them and against them. And even after the round was over, we just like hung out and talked together. Chad, you played a match against the deaf individual.
Yeah, so he had a standard deck. He was using the Countless Formation, or what's it called? Assault Formation deck.
What fight?
Yeah, it was pretty impressive. He was using cards that I wouldn't have thought of, and he was using Teemer, I believe it was. But I rolled the dice, and to see who goes first, I won. And I asked his friend, I said, how do I say play in sign language? Because I wanted to make them feel comfortable. I wanted to also enjoy the whole moment. And you know how Michelangelo does a cowabunga with his hand? Mm-hmm. Well, both hands do cowabunga, and you point the pinkies at each other. So I pointed out myself, and I did the play sign language, and he was ecstatic. It seemed like he was... It was a very welcoming thing, and especially at a GP, there's people that are there to grind, and there's people that are there to just play magic. Some people don't want to have fun that day. They just want to go get their points or do whatever they want, but it made the whole day very enjoyable.
Yeah. And
this is actually really interesting to me because my sister was born deaf, so I had to learn American Sign Language as a kid to communicate with her.
Really?
Oh,
really?
Yeah. And then also when I started getting back into Magic, two of the best players at the shop I went to were deaf.
That's so cool.
So yeah. This is like almost commonplace for me versus you guys being like, this is so cool. I learned sign language.
Yeah.
And you're like the symbol for play and I'm just sitting here doing it automatically. Like,
well, that's funny. Like I had no idea about that. With you and your sister. So
yeah, like she can hear now. She had a lot of surgery on her ears as a kid.
Good.
So we don't use the sign language as much, but occasionally if she gets too overwhelmed between just the hearing disabilities that she had as a kid and the ADHD she has, mm-hmm. it's almost like her brain shuts it off.
Okay.
So occasionally just to get her attention, we have to use it still.
Well, you are going to be teaching me some sign language in Charlotte then.
I guess I need to like get back on the bandwagon.
Yeah, and this is the kind of feel-good story, feel-good situation that really makes me happy and proud to be part of this community.
Yeah.
Because these guys were there to have fun. They were both enjoying themselves. His translator was having just as much fun as the deaf individual. And they also said they were there with at least one other deaf person who was playing in that tournament. And it was really enjoyable. And hopefully stuff like this can get more positive attention down the road. And I wish we had caught their names. We should have hashed them before we left.
I believe the one that was signing was Mueller.
Mueller?
Okay. Yeah.
You should be able to look on your Planeswalker points and actually get their last names.
Oh, really? Okay.
Sweet.
Yeah, we'll have to do that. Do some research.
Because their team is registered as their last names.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, so, Jason, you just want to touch on how we took down the tournament, the last play of the game?
So the last round was so close. And it was weird, too, because both teams were actually making a couple of mistakes. Like, Chad and I missed at least one trigger on the Sunscorch Regent.
Yeah.
And I think we missed one other trigger somewhere else. But the other team was also doing the same thing. It was weird because we were in the last round, and we were both kind of playing sloppy at that point. But once we all got our acts together, it was a really close game. Chad and I had built up a pretty big advantage, and I was feeling pretty confident. I'm sure you were too.
Yeah, they were only at one life. So.
Yeah, we got them down to one life, and we're like, okay, we got this. But they started making a comeback. They started killing all of our creatures. And to the point where I think we had nothing on the board, right?
I did not. I know you had one or two, maybe.
Yeah, I had like one or two creatures on the board. Yeah, because they casted Descent of the Dragons, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they casted Descent of the Dragons, and they actually chose to kill one of my creatures that was on the board and turn it into a red dragon because it was not a red because my opponent had Encased in Ice in hand. So their idea was... kill all of their creatures, turn them all into 4/4s, kill my creature, turn him into a 4/4 that can be targeted with Encased in Ice, and they were going to win. Well, that was all fine and good, but we topped Lose Calm, which...
You might as well read it.
Yeah. It's gain control of a creature, of another target creature, untap, it gains haste, just like Act of Treason and all those, but it also has a stipulation, it cannot be blocked except by two or more creatures. Well, they had an old Ojutai on the field, Ojutai Soul of Winter. So I top deck Lose Calm, took their Ojutai, attacked, and tapped down their last possible blocking creature. They had one creature available, but because he had to be blocked by two or more creatures, they couldn't block him because I tapped down their second creature, and we ended up getting the win.
And it was really cool because it was one of those things that you normally see on movies or TV that everybody was surrounding the table.
Yeah, and that was it. We had a huge audience. We were the last match going. We had a huge audience, people we knew, people we didn't know, all gathered around us, and they saw me top deck that. And it
wasn't until you explained it, because they were like, oh, the game's going to continue. But Jason's like, no, it can't be blocked but except for two more creatures. And everybody goes, oh.
Yeah, everybody surrounding was like, oh, they got him. And it was just this huge scene, this huge event, and it was awesome. And our opponents took it gracefully. You could tell they were a little bit upset, but they were like, yeah, you got us. Good games and all that. So it was a lot of fun. Chad and I really cashed in, too. If you look at the Facebook group, we got almost $300 worth of prizes each.
Yeah.
Winning that tournament.
That guy is cradles for me, right?
Yeah. So what I ended up, because they give you tickets, it's like Chuck E. Cheese at this place, where if you win a side event, you get tickets, and you can then go to the booth and redeem them for product. And I ended up picking a box of dragons and a Gaia's Cradle, while Chad ended up picking a box of dragons and a From the Vault 20.
Yep.
So, not bad for a $20 entry fee each.
Nope.
But yeah, we were really happy, and that was pretty much the highlight of my weekend.
Yeah, and due to circumstances, I wasn't able to show up for the rest of the weekend, but I was happy just being able to do that. And on top of that, there was a artist there, and
yes.
His name, and I'm sure Brandon Thrasher knows, but his name is Christopher Rush. He is the artist that originally did the first art for Black Lotus. He was there signing playmats, signing his personalized playmats, and just being an overall cool guy. He's very enjoyable.
Yep.
They said they're going to listen to the podcasts, and it's very cool. One of the playmats we will be putting up for the Stars for our – I almost said Star City. That was weird. For the Higher Standards Open tournament that we're going to be having at Gamers Vault. So, yeah, we had a great time. We got a lot of product. We're going to be using that product for our win-a-box and for second place or third place maybe. So the entire weekend was enjoyable.
I didn't realize you guys went and had, like, a full-on conversation with Christopher Rush.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
At the time, there was really nobody else at his booth. He was just kind of sitting there by himself. So we walked up and we were talking to him, and I feel like a dumbass because I didn't realize initially that he was the guy that did the original Black Lotus art until somebody walked up to him and said, hey, I just want to shake the hand of the guy that drew Black Lotus. And I'm like, So, and then we just started talking. We were talking about the podcast, and he had his agent there who also played the game. And he's like, oh, you guys do a podcast, and we gave him our card, and hopefully he's listening.
Yeah. Well, Sunday, Trevor went over there because he loves just going to the artists and hanging out.
Yeah.
And Christopher Rush had been commissioned to make cards that had mana symbols on them, and somebody had acetoned them, so it was just the foil.
Okay. Yeah.
And Chris and his agent, who I always forget his name, and I talk to him all the time, we're trying to figure out how to make the circles perfectly on that size card.
Okay.
So they're, like, trying cup lids and all this other nonsense. And Trevor's like, well, here, I have this tube lid from his playmat.
Okay.
And it's the United States Postal Service size one. So it's not the oversized tubes that you get from, like, Star City.
Right, right.
It's much smaller. And so they tried that out, and it was, like, the perfect size.
Nice.
So we wound up sitting there for a while while Christopher Rush got through all these circles that he had to draw.
Very cool. But, yeah, that was our weekend. I guess that's it.
Yeah. I'd much rather not talk about Saturday because it was pretty much unpleasant day altogether for me. So Friday was my Grand Prix and had a blast.
I wish cool. I had gotten to play more Friday.
Yeah. It was good.
Did you end up playing that foiled again?
Right no, now? I actually went to dinner because Trevor had just gotten off and he was starving and
gotcha.
Everything else. So it was just go get dinner and then crash so we would be ready for Saturday because he had to be back at the hall by 8.
Yeah, speaking of starving, Jason, how long was that tournament? 5 hours?
one?
The two-headed giant.
Oh, God, yeah. It took forever. It was 5 rounds. And, yeah, each round went to time. Every single round went to time. So, yeah, it had to have been 5 hours. And then we were waiting around for so long after the last round for them to finally post standings and results so we could actually redeem our prizes.
Yeah,
it was long, but it's still, again, worth it because, you know, we won.
So. Yeah, Foiled Again would have been going later than you guys, so I'm really happy I didn't do that.
Yeah. But, all right, upcoming tournaments. Is anybody playing in anything coming up? Renee?
Well, depending on how I feel after tomorrow, I have a PPTQ IQ at Alternate Universes in Wilmington that is modern. So we're going to take the Collected Company out for a spin.
Nice.
See how that goes. It is not four color, so significantly less exciting. And then there's some more stuff next week and the week after that because I'm really dedicated to trying to get these 250 points.
Yeah.
Nice.
I want sleep and specials.
Yeah. The only money I'm going to be spending on Modern Masters is probably going to be this weekend. Top Deck Games here locally is doing a, I think it's GPT for Las Vegas, where it's a sealed. It's 6 packs of Modern Masters 2015 for $75.
I don't think that comes out until the next week.
Oh. Well, if that's the case, then I'm not doing anything this weekend. So whenever they are doing that is when I'm playing it. But other than that, not much going on for me.
I can tell you.
Well, if she's looking that up, I will not be doing anything probably until GP Charlotte other than playing on MTGO.
Yeah, I'm always on MTGO. It's... Oh, and that's one thing, too, is I brewed and posted 2 deck lists on the Facebook group last week that got a bit of excitement. I posted a black-white control list off of the back of Myth Realized, and then another blue-white control list also running Myth Realized, and I had people messaging me afterwards saying, oh, I'm going to play your deck at FNM this week. I had one guy talk about the black-white list and another person talk about the blue-white list. So give me some feedback on those and let me know how you did because I was cleaning up on Magic Online with both of them. So if anybody wants to play those lists and give me some feedback, please. I'm all ears.
CCT
nice.
Is next Saturday.
Okay, so it's not this weekend. Which, you know what? I won't even be in town for that. So, yay, I don't get to play in anything.
You can come and play in Modern.
This weekend?
Yeah.
I think work is going to preclude me from being able to do that, unfortunately.
Oh, Bridges.
Yeah. Bridges, planes, trains, automobiles.
Yes.
Bastards. So, yeah, that's me in a nutshell. Look for me on Magic Online, JC Roskam. That's a me.
That's a me.
Not Mario.
Yeah.
All right, I think we're done.
Yeah.
We're done.
I do have a couple of shout-outs really quick, if you guys don't mind.
Go for it.
First of all, Matt Hoover from Cast from Exile, on a whim, he kind of decided to do a bonus episode of Cast from Exile where they cover Modern Master spoilers, kind of like we were doing on this show for Dragons of Tarkir spoilers, and it was he and I and Travis from the Facebook group. And we ended up having a lot of fun. We recorded last night. Matt's currently working on editing and posting the show, but keep an ear out. It was a hell of a lot of fun. So hopefully it ends up sounding as good as it did when we recorded. And also, a good friend of mine from my hometown of Bakersfield, California, is also doing a podcast. It is not Magic related. It's called the Sofa King Podcast. And
does he review sofas?
No. They're just three kind of, you know, 20s, 30s nerdy kind of people like us, and they just talk about pop culture. They were talking about the drought in California. They talk about biohacks. They were talking about strange addictions, strange articles. So they kind of run the whole gambit. One of their most recent topics was, is a zombie apocalypse, you know, actually feasible? Could it really happen? So go check out the Sofa King Podcast. They are actually on iTunes. So it's really funny. They've had me rolling a couple of times.
Is there a way to get it not on iTunes?
Yeah, you can go directly to their website, the Sofa King Podcast, and I think they're also on SoundCloud.
Sweet.
So, check them out. And Brent Van Tassel is my old friend from my hometown. I've known him since I was like 12.
Cool.
That's all I got. All
right. I guess that's it in a nutshell. Higher Standards out.
Bye.
We'll be back.